Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Hello, and welcome to Radio Oldie with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Oldie, and I'm talking about the new June issue with Charlotte Metcalf. Charlotte, can you explain what you do at the Oldie?
Yes, hello. I edit the supplements for the Oldie. There are seven of them, and one of them is the annual, which means every year I have to go back and have a really good look at all the great articles that have been written. So we're here to discuss what makes a good article, and that's very exciting because I spend my life looking for those that really stand out.
And they do immediately, don't they?
Yeah, they
and
really
our
do,
cover
yeah.
piece in the June issue is by Andrew Roberts, and it's called When Actors Sing. Top actors and comedians often made albums, and Andrew is a brilliant expert on the highs and extreme lows, and they're very, very funny, not least the pictures. My favourite is John Inman's memorable album, Are You Being Served, Sir?, which had a pop video shot in the Southampton branch of Debenhams. The title song was later used as the theme for the dire Australian version of Are You Being Served? And many listeners will remember that period where if you're a famous actor or comedian, from Benny Hill to Dirk Bogart to Patrick McNee and Honor Blackman and even Kojak, you'd record an album as a matter of course. And Andrew is an obsessive. He knows about the Coronation Street star Jack Albert Tatlock Howarth's I'll Do from 1971, Paul Henry's Benny's theme, as in Crossroads, and Noel Gordon Sings. Noel Gordon, who's also in Crossroads. In 1981, she was sacked from Crossroads and promptly released the lament After All These Years. He also points out that actually some of the songs are really good. Benny Hill's Ernie, the fastest milkman in the West, topped the charts in 71. Other brilliant songs were Lee Marvin's Wandering Star and David Soul's Silver Lady. Was there anything you particularly liked in this issue?
I did love that article as well, because I think what the Oldie does so brilliantly is it slightly puts a pin in the puffed up balloons. And this was particularly brilliant piece about how poor actors really have to go through the humiliation of putting out these terrible albums. So I just loved all those being rounded up. I thought it was a great read, very funny.
And sorry, and on that, just thinking about what makes for a good piece, sometimes there's a peg, which is the word we use for something which has an anniversary or something in the news. Sometimes like this, there's no peg. It's something that a lot of our readers will immediately recognise. They'll remember Benny Hill, etc., and yet I've never seen this being written about, and so hopefully something, a buzz goes on in the reader's mind going, yes, I remember those, and if it's funny as well like this, that's getting close to gold dust.
Yes, and the other thing I love in this issue is one of our favourite columnists of all is Mary Killen, who's always, whatever she does is fantastic, and she's writing about something which could be boring, but never in her hands for this issue, which is watches.
And just to explain before you go into that, Mary Killen is the our beauty correspondent and is also the Spectator's agony aunt, and she and her husband Giles Wood are both columnists in the Oldie.
So what I really like about this piece that she's written is it just sums up why she's so brilliant, because she's got a way of saying things we all know, but she just says it so beautifully and effortlessly. Like, we all bang on as old as well, oh, why can't young people be on time? It's because, you know, we never had mobiles, you know, we used our watches. And she just writes these four beautiful little lines. Remember the days of making an appointment and then being on time? Well, by the late 90s, timings became provisional because mobiles allowed us to communicate that we were running late. Well, it's so simple, but it just does remind us all of why watches might be making a comeback. And she's excellent, and then she's very, very funny at the end, because she talks a lot about who owns a watch and is absolutely hilarious about whether it's the Dalai Lama or the Pope and what they own, because I actually learned a lot. So Pope Francis has a simple watch, while the Dalai Lama has four Rolexes. So she's full of...
She actually does a lot of research, because you get a lot of columnists, not in the Brilliant Oldie, who you can tell they've just dashed off their piece on what they think about something, and actually, unless you're an absolute genius, it's not enough. And so someone like Mary, who is very funny and a brilliant writer, but actually she puts in a lot of work talking to people and researching books and online, and you can always tell when a piece is well researched, like, as you say, this one is. And she's also extremely good at looking at humans as a tribe. So in this piece about watches, she compares watch wearing to Rupert Sheldrake's theory of morphic resonance, where sparrows started imitating each other, pecking the foil tops off doorstep milk bottles. And she says that's why male watch wearing gets going again, is because people imitate each other. But she's always very good at spotting tribal human behaviour.
She has, in talking of research, she even knows what the king wears, which is a simple faith Roman numeral version with a ticking second hand for everyday use. And then she ends by saying, nothing flash mind or it will be nicked. Brilliant, classic Mary.
Yeah, and like, very, very hard to be economist and go on doing it month in, month out. And the best ones are combining a lot of things like synchronized swimmers under the surface, which makes it very effortless to read, but a lot of effort goes in to writing it. And Charlotte, I've been much enjoying your Aldi Annual 2026, full of extraordinary writers since the first Aldi issue, edited by the great Richard Ingrams in 1992, and one of my favourites, who, like Mary Killen, can write about anything, and it's gripping, is Roger Lewis, who wrote a brilliant piece, which is in your annual, called A Writer's Life is Not a Happy One. What made you pick that article particularly?
Oh, every single line in it made me pick it. I mean, Roger is just a complete genius, I think. So why this is so brilliant and such a classic oldie piece is that he combines a kind of absolute horror story about his life, but without any self-pity at all. And it's this extraordinary way that he has of revelling in his poverty as a writer and his lack of recognition as a writer. The last three lines of this piece are so brilliant because he's terribly, terribly funny about it. You know, why do authors keep going? Is it sheer masochism? Perhaps we like being lonely. And he goes on and on about how awful it is, how he's lost all his houses, how no one, you know, he's got nowhere and all his friends have outrun him. And then at the end he says, my solace is the suspicion that only mediocrities live long and contented lives. It just everything about him makes me laugh.
That's a very good example, the way he ended that. But again, I'm not going to try and say newspaper journalism is like being Proust, but at the same time there is a massive difference between the best and the worst, and a really well-constructed piece. And this piece would only have been about 750 or 800 words, as well as being very funny, full of extraordinary observations. It has a structure that you wouldn't notice. So I won't tell the whole story, but it starts with a personal reminiscence, goes into the terrible miseries of his life, and finishes at the end with his revelation that he's nearly died a couple of times. And as you say, thank God that it's only mediocrities who live long, contented lives. But actually, in a piece, a friend of mine once said about another writer that he was really good, but his endings were no good. So it's not enough just to do a quip at the end. You've got to build up to it brilliantly, like Roger does then. And as you say, he's a master at being gloomy, but it's not like some gloomy friends you might have over hell on earth to see. He makes gloominess very, very, very funny. And he also makes some very good observations. So he's quite right when he says, it's never ceased to amaze me just how horrible people in the literary profession tend to be. Childish, grasping, disloyal, on the make. And actually, an awful lot of writers, much easier to spend your life saying how wonderful and lovely everyone else is. It's actually much braver and puts you in a much more difficult position if you're rude, particularly about your fellow writers who keep their vengeance cold.
Well, I agree. And actually, after reading this, you'd think, how dare one not be gloomy? it's a much cleverer position to be in.
Yes, exactly.
You feel you were very stupid not to be after reading that. And that's why it's just so brilliant.
And Charlotte, on that front, you were going back through 34 years of issues. So that's hundreds and hundreds of issues. What made things jump out particularly?
As you said, about going back to the issue of the wonderful piece about the actors making records, it's something that we suddenly all remember. We go, oh, I'd forgotten all about that. But
well, I think one of the greatest joys of my time editing The Oldie, which is a mere 9 years, is being able to commission and talk to people I'd grown up with as my heroes, like the late, great Barry Humphreys, who appears in your fantastic issue. He's talking about the Wizards from Oz, the wave of brilliant Australians who came to Britain in the 1950s and 60s, including him, Clive James, Jermaine Greer, Robert Hughes. And when Barry came to work or do a column for The Oldie, he also brought with him three frenemies as his fellow colonists, Dame Edna Everidge, Sir Les Paterson and Barry McKenzie. And to be able to have these four brilliant Australian writers appearing in The Oldie, but with a wonderful writer, Barry Humphreys, but also to be able to talk to him is a joy beyond compare. And we've got a similar figure in the latest June issue, which is Dick Clement of Clement and Lafrenne, the terrific writers who together wrote Porridge, Lovejoy and The Likely Lads, three fantastic series. He's writing in the new issue about a later series of Auf Wiedersehen, Pet. So it was such a hit, the first series about the British builders in Germany, that they wanted to set a new series in a different country. And they came up out of nowhere with the idea of setting up in Cuba. And he's written a brilliant piece about, OK, you come up with this idea of a tropical place to have send out the British builders, but how do you find a plot? And he and Ian Lafrenne went out to Havana on a recce, and they couldn't come up with ideas at all. At one stage, they had an idea of Oz, the great a builder played by the brilliant Jimmy Nail, falling in love with a Cuban ballerina. But it fell apart, and they're about to give up when on their last day on their recce, they were invited to tea with the British ambassador. And then while they were chatting over the tea and the biscuits, a wonderful thing happened. Through the wall, they heard the faint but familiar sound of sawing and hammering. They asked the ambassador what it was, and he said, "There are some renovations in the library." And they said, "Who's doing the work?" And the ambassador said, "Well, our fellow countrymen. They do all the repairs in our consuls and embassies overseas. We can't trust that to the locals. Who knows what they might find?" And so immediately, bang, like that, they worked out the structure of their series of Alvin Zempet's set in Cuba. Anyway, it's a marvellous piece.
I agree, and I love this piece. I thought it was so funny because I think the idea of Cuba, if you read this piece, you'll see it's terribly funny. It seemed to come out of
no, suddenly
nowhere.
Ian Lafrenne just suddenly said to Alan Yentob, who is the late great commissioner, Alan Yentob said, "Where do you want to put the next series?" And Ian Lafrenne said, "Out of nowhere, Cuba." And then they had to retrofit it. Yeah, and had to try and come up with a plot. And only because of this little serendipitous meeting with the British ambassador did it come off.
Mm. So we're planning the new annual now. So I'm right in the middle of picking all those pieces. And it is not easy. But as Harry says, the brilliant ones always pop out, don't they? Always.
They do, yeah. No, there's you can't define it, because otherwise you'd be packing every single issue with perfect articles, which is impossible to do, and that's why journalism goes on being so enjoyable, because it is not perfectible. But we've talked about a few of the brilliant pieces, both in Charlotte's annual and in the new issue of The Oldie, the June issue, out now on newsstands. Thanks so much, Charlotte.
Thank you, Harry. Enjoyed it. You've been listening to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford.
Why not get 3 trial issues of the Oldie magazine for just £1? I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.